जयो राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम टू आवर मॉर्निंग श्रीमद् भागवतम क्लास. सो टुडे वील कंटिन्यू विथ कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 22 एंटाइटल्ड पृथु महाराज मीटिंग विद द कुमारास. वी आर डीलिंग विद टेक्स्ट 48. Please repeat.
Maitreya uvacha ta atma yoga pataya adi rajena pujitah shilam tadiyam samsantah khe abhavan mishatam rinam. Maitreya uvacha आत्मयोगपतय आदिराजेन पूजिताः शीलं तदीयं संसंतः खे अभवन् मिषतां नृणां. मैत्रेय उवाच त आत्मयोगपतय आदिराजेन पूजिताः शीलं तदीयं शंसन्तः के अभवन् मिषतां नृणां.
मैत्रेय उवाच त आत्मयोगपतय
आदिराजेन पूजिताः शीलं तदीयं संसन्तः के अभवन्मिषतां नृणां मैत्रेय उवाच तात्मयोगपतया आदिराजेन पूजिताः शीलं तदीयं संसन्तः के अभवन्निषतां नृणां
माताजी
मैत्रेय उवाच तात्मयोगपतया आदिराजेन पूजिताः तीलं तदीयं संसन्तः खे अभवन्मिषतां नृणां
वट् टु वर्ड् मीनिङ्ग्
मैत्रेय उवाच
The great sage Maitreya continued to speak. Atma Yoga Patayaha, the masters of self-realization by devotional service. Atirajena, by the original king, Prithu. Pujitaha, being worshipped. Shilam, character, tadiyam, of the king, shamsantaha, eulogizing, khe, in the sky, abhavan, appeared, mishatam, while observing, nirnam, of the people. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, Being thus worshipped by Maharaj Prithu, the four Kumaras who were masters of devotional service became very pleased. Indeed, they appeared in the sky and praised the character of the king, and everyone observed them. Purport. It is said that the demigods never touch the surface of the earth. They walk and travel in space only. Like the great sage Narada, the Kumaras did not require any machine to travel in space. There are also residents of Siddhaloka who can travel in the space without machines. Since they can go from one planet to another, they are called Siddhas. That is to say that they have acquired all mystic and yogic powers. Such great saintly persons who have jai shri radha vrindavan bihari bhagwan ki jai shri gauranga mahaprabhu ki jai right yeah such great saintly persons who have attained complete perfection in mystic yoga are not visible in this age on earth because humanity is not worthy of their presence the kumaras however praise the characteristics of maharaj prithu and his great devotional attitude and humility The Kumaras were greatly satisfied by King Prithu's method of worship. It was by the grace of Maharaj Prithu that the common citizens in his domain could see the Kumaras flying in outer space.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshattarine Vanchakalpa Tarurbhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Hare Krishna. So today we are going to have a very mystical class, because we are going to talk about the mystic powers of a yogi. So we are in the middle of a very, very beautiful chapter. We just heard how wonderful in the beginning of this chapter Prithu Maharaj received the four Kumaras. Because in the previous chapter, when the Lord personally blessed Prithu Maharaj in the yagya, in the assembly, there he predicted that very soon, Hare Krishna Maharaj, very soon the four Kumaras are going to come, and true to the Lord's words, the four Kumaras came to bless Prithu Maharaj. And later, Prithu Maharaj, very humbly, he expresses his own fallen position and expresses inquiries, the perfect inquiries to the four Kumaras. And as a consequence, the four Kumaras gave wonderful explanation of the importance of devotional service. Right? And now, we are almost at the end of that section. So we see here, Te Atma Yoga Pataya. So these masters of self-realization, the four Kumaras, Adi Rajena Pujita, having eulogized the great Prithu Maharaj, right? So now, what have they done? Khe Abhavan Mishatam Ranam. Khe, they have just ascended into the sky. So in this entire purport, Sri Prabhupada is talking about how the Siddhas, the yogis who have perfected this mystical perfection, how they have the ability to do many things which are beyond our worldly understanding, our worldly physics. They transcend, right? Newton only saw the apple fall, but the residents of Prithu Maharaj's kingdom saw people fly, right? So now we know how advanced Bhagavatam science is, right? Now, usually as devotees, when we read, as practitioners of Bhakti Yoga, when we read this kind of mystical, descriptions, there are two usual responses, and correct me if I'm wrong. There are two usual responses that we give. One, we totally discard them as nonsense. This is all nonsense. Or two, we may start getting enamored by them. Right? So, rejection and enamorment, which is basically attraction or aversion, are actually two sides of the same coin. Right? Raga and Dvesha are actually two sides of the same coin. And it comes basically due to ignorance. Right? So if we want to properly understand or look at this whole Siddhas or Siddhis from a proper perspective, we need to understand what is the metaphysics behind them. How does a yogi actually create this kind of Siddhis? And once you understand, you will see actually it's not so fantastic. There's nothing to get enamored about, and nothing mystical about the mystic yogi anymore. Right? Just like how, when imagine a person who has never seen a gadget like this, a mobile phone or something like that, or maybe somebody living in the forest all their life, and suddenly when they see a gadget like this, they think, oh my God, this is some kind of a magical device. But for you and I, we know, okay, just some bunch of electronics, we know how the whole technology works. So once you understand how the technology works, we actually demystify things, and it's no more such a big enamorment, or we don't prematurely reject things. We just respect things. Somebody put their intelligence in manufacturing this, so we respect them for that, because ultimately that intelligence is also coming from Krishna, right? And also we don't get too enamored by this, right? So with that mood, so let's begin today's discussion, where we try to understand how the mystic yoga actually works. So Patanjali, in the third chapter of the Yoga Sutras, the whole chapter is entitled as Vibhuti Pada. He's going to talk only about the mystic Siddhis. And the entire mystic Siddhis works on the basis of the power of mind, right? Because as we see in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna talks about three levels of realities. There is Adi Bhautika reality, the physical reality, which is what most of us deal with, which is what most of modern science deals with. And there is Adhyatmic reality, which is the spiritual reality which as devotees we are interested in. In between these two layers, there is the Adi Daivika reality, the realm of the psychics, the realm of the, you know, the devatas, how all the cosmic administrators, they work. Like, can you imagine Indra is sitting up there in the heaven and is controlling rains on earth? That's also kind of mystic siddhi, a potency awarded by Krishna for the sake of creation. Right? All the devatas, how they are sitting there, controlling our senses, controlling different parts of our body and this whole nature. It's also kind of a mystical arrangement, which the Lord has awarded them. Right? So that this middle layer of reality, the Adi Daivika reality, many times we just either we misunderstand it or we discard it. Right? A yogi operates at this layer. Right? So there itself we understand that they are not operating at the highest layer of spirit. They are still operating at the subtle layer. Right? They're still operating at the mind, intelligence and ahankar layers only. Right? And of course, they are trying to operate at that layer to transcend that eventually. So, as a yogi starts to begin their yogic process, starting with yamas and niyamas, goes all the way up to pratyahar, and at that stage, one begins their antaranga yoga or their deeper yoga, the real yoga, which is dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Right? These three phases, dharana is focus. Right, desha, bandha, chittasya, where they bind their attention to one area, that is focus. Then as the focus increases, one comes to a state of meditation, that is dhyan. And beyond that, they try to access that stage of samadhi, which is a state of complete trance, complete absorption. Now these three stages, dharana, dhyan and samadhi, are like shifting of gears in a car, for example. Right? So you don't start a car straight away in fourth gear. You have to go from first, second, third. Right? Likewise, whenever a yogi wants to enter into samadhi, they first start with advanced yogis. They start with dharana, then go to dhyan, and then eventually they reach samadhi. So these three stages put together give perfect control over the mind. So in Sanskritam, control means yama, and perfect means samyak rupena, sam. So sam yama. So this stage is called as samyama. All these three, dharana, dhyana and samadhi put together. Right? Now, ideally, the yogi should be using this technique to control their mind. But once you develop such a strong ability to control your mind, you also now can start using that same ability on matter. Right? And this is where the Sankhya metaphysics explains how the yogic siddhis actually work. We know from, for example, when we study the Sankhya from Bhagavatam, we know how the Lord creates. Everything ultimately begins from Pradhan, and how Pradhan goes through its various vikaras, where it goes through various transformations. From the Sattviki vikara comes the mind, from the Rajasi vikara comes the intelligence, and from the Tamasi vikara we see all these tanmatras, all the 24, the other 21 elements, right? They all come because of the transformation of the ahankar based. So as you can see, therefore, what we call as gross matter is basically just a transformation of some fundamental elements, starting with pradhan and the gunas, right? So when a yogi tries to look at matter, there are three aspects of matter called as dharma, lakshana and avastha. So dharma means the intrinsic nature of any object, right? We'll try to understand these three terms taking a simple example of a clay pot, right? Now right now when you call this as, okay, or we'll use this, right? We'll use this container here, right? So what is this? This is a steel bottle, right? So this is the current avastha, means the present condition of this matter is in the form of, in the shape of a steel bottle. That is called as avastha. But this avastha, this bottle is made of steel. Steel we know is an iron alloy. So fundamentally, this is iron particles. So that is called as lakshana, which is the temporal state of matter. So eventually all this bottle, you can see it is nothing but iron particles shaped in the form of a bottle. So that's a little deeper level of vision of the same bottle, right? So that is called as lakshana. So if a bottle is the avastha, iron ore is the lakshana. But what even behind that iron ore, there is something called as a dharma, the intrinsic nature of iron. Now, which element from Sankhya will you say is iron? Out of the 24 elements? The earth element. Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Right? It's earth. Because this is how beautifully the Sankhya philosophy works. You see, modern science thinks they are very advanced because they have 118 elements. But all the 118 elements of modern science are just three elements of Sankhya philosophy. So you can see how much more we know in terms of, right? So what is the basis of the entire Sankhya philosophy? Sankhya is basically, or if I simplify that question further, why? What is matter? What will you define matter as? Anybody would like to share some light on this? What is matter in a more fundamental state? What will you say? Sorry, Mati? Mixture of anus. Yes, you are talking like a Vaisheshika philosopher. Very nice. Yes. What is matter doing to you and me? Something we perceived and observed, but spiritual things can also be perceived and observed. Literally, what is matter doing to each and every one of us? Let's go a little closer. When you say entangling, specifically, what is it like? At which level is it operating? What is it entangling? Can spirit ever be entangled? Spirit is always pure Sachidananda. So what of the spirit is it entangling? The consciousness. Yes, perfect. So what matter does, matter is that which entangles consciousness by giving you a material experience. So the Sankhya philosophers, they analyze this world in terms of what are the varieties of material experiences you can get. And can you imagine how many varieties of material experiences are there in this world? Take a wild guess. Okay, that is one answer. How many varieties of material experiences do we have? 24. That's it. These are the 24 elements of Sankhya. Right? So to give you a simple example. So if I take this bottle and hit my head, what happens? I experience pain. If I take this phone and hit my head, what happens? I experience pain. If I take this wood and hit my head, what happens? I experience pain. But if I take this air and throw on my head, what happens? Nothing happens. So you see, all earth elements, they respond the same way. Whether it is titanium or gold or iron or copper or zinc or blah, 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 whatever they like to put in the modern periodic table, for you and me, they create one kind of experience, which is the earth experience. All the gases, hydrogen, helium, blah, 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 all the lists that you see, argon, oxygen, nitrogen, they all create the same kind of experience. Right? Details may vary. You cannot breathe the hydrogen, you can breathe oxygen. Those are secondary details. But the earth, the air, the vayu tattva creates one kind of an experience. All liquids. So jala doesn't mean just water. Many times we loosely say, when you say earth, water, by water we means anything that is liquid in state. All liquids create the same experience. Right? That's how Kapila defines. What do liquids do? They enhance the volume. Right? What do earth do? They give shape. What does air do? It fills the gaps. That is how Kapila defines the elements in the third canto. Right? So, all these elements, they create a particular... Therefore, when we're talking about the reason why we went to a long discussion, little detour, was that the dharma of this bottle is the earth element. So, a yogi tries to look at matter from these three principles of dharma, lakshana, and avastha, And this is where mind over matter comes. Because right now, our ability, matter takes a shape not because of certain physical laws, but because of certain mental influences. Like for example, somebody thought that with iron, this can be made. But they only thought in a very gross way. They have to use gross technology to transform this into iron, the iron into bottle by using heat and all the industrial manufacturing process. But somebody who is very strong at their mental level, who has developed this samyama, perfect control of the mind using dhyan, dharana and samadhi, they can learn to transform matter by changing the sequence of events, right, which matter goes through. Right? So to give you another example of this, okay, this is where I'm going to stretch your imagination now. Please be ready. So imagine I have a black box, right? And that black box, it's like a machine, right? Imagine, have you seen those X-ray machines in an airport? Imagine I have a box, right? And in that box, it has the following functions. If I press button one, it pounds. So there is some kind of a hammer, some heavy object comes and it pounds. So whatever object you put in that box, it just pounds it to pulp, into powder, whatever, right? So button one does pounding. Button two adds water. Right? If you press button two, some sprinkler is there, it puts water on that, whatever is inside it. Button three, it applies some force and makes it into some shape. Button 4 applies heat, right? So what are the four functions? First one was pounding, second, water, shape, like molding, let's use the word molding, right? Third is molding and fourth is heat, right? Now, I take a lump of clay, put it through that machine and press the buttons 1, 2, 3, 4 in that sequence. What will I get? Pot. Jai. Now, I take a pot, right? This is where you have to stretch your imagination. I take a pot, I put it in the entrance, and I press the buttons 4, 3, 2, 1. What will I get? Huh? Yes, Mati, what will we get? Pakka Bartan? Okay, let's see the sequence. I took a pot. What is button 4? Yeah, right. We'll break it down. We'll break it down for everyone, right? First, I apply a lot of heat to the existing pot. On a very, very hot pot, what am I doing now? Shape, right? There is some force I'm applying. So, and in that, on that hot forced object, when I apply cold water, what happens? It crackles, right? Like, you know, if you take a hot, say glass surface or a clay or something, like on a hot ceramics, if you suddenly put cold water, it crackles, it breaks, right? So you have cracked pot, and on that you're applying pounding force. What do you get? Soil, you get the clay back, right? So this is how he says that by changing the sequence of manipulations, you can bring the original thing back from the product and the product back from the original, right? Now here I gave you a very, very gross example of some machine and pounding, but these are all happening at a subtle level, like at how pradhan is transforming into, say, the mind, and the mind creating all the other experiences and elements. So we are trying to reverse that process. So this is how the yogi works. So this is the foundation. So this whole concept is called as parinama. Parinama means consequence, change, transformation, right? So ideally, the yogi is supposed to use this power to create parinama in his mental level, at his consciousness level, and try to reverse the mind back into its original state, you know, reverse the mind into the intelligence, intelligence into the ego, and ego into the pure self. And that is how the yogi is supposed to achieve liberation through samadhi. But that power can sometimes be very tempting. And they start using that power on matter. And that is how, by samyama on matter, they start to manipulate matter. And Patanjali gives a whole list of all these, like, for example, he says, just by using this samyam, by observing the dharma, lakshana and avastha of something, you can know an object's past and future. Right? That is how they explain the metaphysics of knowing. The trikalagya understanding comes because just by looking at this matter, or even I give the example of for example, if you have this board, if you look at this board, just by looking at this board, an intelligent person can say this board has been used for a long time. If you look at how the edges are cracked, or look at how so much of layers of chalk piece powder on it. So from just by physical observation, you are able to say so much. Imagine if you are able to look at the board from its subtle levels, right? By the dharma lakshan avastha, you can say so much. You could probably even say which wood was used to use that board. That wood has come from which tree. To that level, a yogi is able to comprehend things, right? Likewise, just by using this samyama on sound, they can understand intentions. Right? That is how they say, yogi is able to talk to animals and understand sounds from nature and birds because they use the samyama power on sounds like that. Right? So like that, he talks about a whole range of mystical siddhis. Right? By samyama on the strength of elephants, one develops that equal strength of elephants. By samyama on, this is an interesting one. So he talks about how a yogi develops invisibility, the adrishya nature. How does he do? He says he does samyama on the opposite person's eye and thereby blocks the light reflected from their body reaching their eye. And that is how they become invisible. They're standing right here, right? But they block, because how do we see things? We see things when light bounces off objects and hits the retina, right? So what if they block that light itself? So that's how you become invisible, right? Interesting, right? So they don't vanish into thin air. They are standing there, but they just block the light like that. So like that. Or by doing samyama on one's navel, one develops the entire constitution of the body, one can understand. By samyama on the sun, one will understand what is happening in the entire universe. By samyama on the moon, one will be able to understand how these all the constellations are moving, how the, like our great Acharya Sukhdev Goswami was sitting here without telescope, he was telling us the entire cosmology. How did they do that? Right? Because just by their power of focus on certain elements of nature, they are able to get the understanding of the entire universe, right? In fact, they can start even manipulating how their own body operates. Like for example, our Kumaras, whom we are under discussion. The Kumaras, we understand, they are always very young. They remain as Kumaras, right? So there's a very yogic explanation of how they remain young. So it is described, even in modern science, so we will. I will invoke our Sridhar Prabhu's knowledge now. So is it the pineal gland is what that activates the pituitary, right? How are they connected? Right. Okay. So what is it that activates the at the time of puberty all the transformation that happen in the body is activated by which gland? Pituitary. And the and why is it that in a childhood these transformations don't take place? Something is blocking the pituitary, right? Is it the pineal gland? Hypothalamus. Time, yeah. So the hypothalamus and the pineal are the ones which are, as a young child, are blocking the pituitary from functioning. And the pituitary, as we start aging, it calcifies. As this calcifies, then pituitary gets activated, and that is how at the time of puberty all the physiological changes happen. So once the physiological changes happen, the body now starts to get the faculty to fulfill its stored samskaras. The samskaras and impressions are there in children as well as grown-ups, but the facility is not there. So what the Kumaras did is just by using samyama on their own body, they continued the pineal flow to continue to happen, and therefore they remained young forever. So in the yogic kriyas, it is called as Chandra Bindu. So apparently this part, whichever gland that is in the shape of a moon, half crescent moon, and there is some bindu drops which come. By allowing those drops to continue to flow, they prevent the pituitary from ever getting activated, and thereby they can remain young forever, or in the Kumara Avastha forever. So like that. So you can see how these, you know, all of this may sound very, very enamoring, right? Even at this point, some of you are thinking, oh my God, if I had those powers, right? But this is what Patanjali himself says in the same chapter, that how all these mystical powers are an obstacle in attaining samadhi, right? Because these are all just powers, mundane powers in worldly pursuits. So there's nothing so extraordinary about these siddhis. Right, they are all, and even in the Uddhava Gita also, Lord Krishna, he talks about, he says, antarayan vadanti eta, antarayan, antaryam, antara means interruption, all these mystic powers that I described, Krishna also describes all the mystic powers, but of course this is a very devotional mystic power in a sense, they are, just by meditating on different aspects of the Lord, one can develop these mystical siddhis. But Krishna himself says, these are all antarayan. Antaraya means these are impediments, whatever I have said so far, vadanti eta, to the mystic perfections. Yunjato yoga uttama, for ones who have understood the uttama yoga, the highest yoga, the perfection of yoga, one who know this, for them, all of these are just mere impediments. Because maya sampadya manasya, kalakshapana hetava. So, because these are kalakshapana, means they, literally this is a word for time pass. You know, in India we use the word time pass, where you are killing time, you are wasting time. So kalakshapana is a Sanskritam word for it. So next time you can politely give gali to someone. Prabhu, please don't do kalakshapana. Right? So all these, the learned experts in devotional service state that the mystical perfection of yoga that I have mentioned are actually impediments and are a waste of time for one who's practicing the supreme yoga, by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. So one who's directly connected to Krishna, he says these are all waste of time. So likewise, Patanjali also in the Yoga Sutras, in the fourth chapter, he says how these mystic perfections can also be attained through janma, aushadhi, mantra, tapa and samadhi. By high birth. High birth means not worldly birth. By being born as a Siddha Loka or Devata Loka, Swarga Lokas, these are very natural, these Siddhis. Or mantra, by power of mantras also one can attain Siddhis. Or by certain Aushadhis, like Somaras is described in the commentaries, how by Somaras one can attain some kind of mystical perfections. By Tapa, like how our Hiranyakashipu, he did Tapasya and he attained mystical perfections. Or through samadhi. These are the five ways in which one can attain this. And Krishna in the very next verse of that Uddhava Gita, he says, janma aushadhi tapo mantrer yavater iha siddhayaha yoginapnoti tasarva nanyer yoga gatim vrajet. Whatever mystical perfections can be achieved by janma, good birth, aushadhi, herbs, tapa, austerity and mantras can all be achieved by devotional service to me. Indeed, one cannot achieve the actual perfection of yoga by any other means. So this is a very important point. Even the mystical yogi to attain perfection, they need that final support of devotion. Why? Because again, in the Yoga Sutras also, Patanjali says, once you give up all of this mystical perfections, only then you will be attaining the spiritual state. Right? Why? What karma, jnana and dhyana does, from a negative state of matter, they bring you to a neutral state of zeroness. But from zero, if you have to go to positive state, you need devotional service. Right? In the Narada Bhakti Sutras also, he says that the nature of bhakti is, it is eternal. Nowhere in scriptures you will see karma, jnana, or dhyana as eternal. Why? Because you have to give up all of that if you want to enter into the spiritual world. It's like saying, when you go on a, say imagine you are going, you live up the mountains or something like that. Imagine your home is up there in the mountains, right? So to reach home, you have to trek up the mountain. So when you are trekking, what do you need? You need some water, you need some glucose, probably some food supplies, all the trekking gear, all your shoes, your backpack and this and that. But once you reach home, up the mountain, will you walk around carrying all your backpack and your supplies? No. What is the first thing you will do when you enter home? Throw those bags outside. So karma, jnana and dhyana are like that. Once the soul attains to that perfected stage, it has to give up the knowledge. Even knowledge of liberation is a burden for the liberated soul. I repeat, knowledge of liberation is also a burden. Because where will you use that knowledge? And anything unnecessary, you don't carry into the spiritual world. So literally all the perfection of karma, jnana and dhyana one has to give up if one wants to enter into spiritual realm. This is how beautifully Narada explains in the Bhakti Sutras. Right? And then what is the only thing that will remain eternally with you? That which you will use in spiritual world. In spiritual world, will you use your karma? No. Will you use your jnana? For what? All the jnana is about getting out of matter. There is no matter. Why will you use that? Right? Or will you use your dhyan powers anywhere there? What the whole point of dhyan is to get out of these material layers from intelligence and mind and ego, to get out of that. But you don't have those layers, so why do you use all that? You know, it's like saying, little pun intended guys, don't mind. It's like saying, what will a brahmachari do with a comb? Right? So karma, jnana and dhyana are like brahmachari having a comb. What will you do with it? Throw it out. Right? Like once you join ashram, you don't need the comb anymore. You throw it out. So karma, jnana and dhyana are like that. As soon as you enter into the spiritual world, you throw it out. There's absolutely no need for it. But the devotional aspect, because ultimately that is what the soul does in its liberated state, that is something that it carries. The soul needs to carry into it. That's what is the whole idea of bhakti rasa. Where the soul at that liberated stage, the perfection of that liberation is where it starts to exchange that loving devotional mellows with the Lord. And that is where all the devotional service, as Prabhupada brilliantly translates, that service elements which is the impetus which draws out that rasa in that interaction with the Lord, that is the only thing that the soul carries with it. Right? And not only in the liberated state, even in the conditioned state right now, it is all that which is really potent for us. When Prabhupada writes here, or when Krishna says here that all the mystical perfection can be attained by the power of devotional service, we don't understand the potency of this statement. What a modern scientist does by manipulating matter, what a yogi does by manipulating through the subtle psychic levels, the same thing a devotee can manipulate, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but can create the transformation purely by the power of strong, positive devotional prayer, or by intention. Intention is a modern term, modern language. It's a popular lingo these days. But we understand by the power of prayers, right? And can you imagine? By power of one sincere prayer, somebody changed the whole course of humanity. We had this beautiful festival day before yesterday, and we heard so many devotees glorify Srila Prabhupada, and one consistent theme that everybody maintained is how, you know, Prabhupada traveling all over the world changed the course of humanity. How did Prabhupada do that? Just by the power of one genuine, sincere prayer. How did Advaitacharya change the plans of the Lord? Can you imagine? He brought Krishna into this material world just by the power of one genuine, sincere prayer. And that's what the other day Gaurang was also mentioning, that how, what is Sankirtan ultimately? Sankirtan is that process by which devotees whose hearts are connected come together and express a sincere intention out to Krishna. And that sincere expression of a collective intention can transform the whole world. So if the world is not transforming, we should not blame the mantra, but probably rethink about what is the level of collective intentions that we are having as a Sangha. And probably that is the area that we need to work on. How much collective can we become in expressing our intention? And that's the whole idea of community living, right? So this is a favorite topic of Adhikeshav Prabhu. So you can you can talk to Prabhu about that, right? So yeah, so these are a few thoughts which I wanted to share. We have about 5 minutes for questions. Anybody has any questions or comments? Maharaj, would you like to make any corrections, any additions? So anybody else has any questions or comments, please feel free to. Any suggestions? Maharaj.
This was in the 70s. One of them is growing hair. said you have to give it up. But anything, like he said, just you get a cut, it heals. Mm. It's all mystic powers, you know, so many.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes we lose them, but that was because the hippies wanted, you know, the thing where men wanted long hair, and then he thought you're beautiful. He said, but it's a mystic power, you have to give it up.
Jay.
In Journey Home, Maharaj talks about he coming across different yogis like that. And of course, in Bhagavatam also, we see Kardam Muni is creating. So that is, of course, he dovetails everything in devotion and ever does. So in a way, as you mentioned in the beginning of the class, it fascinates or someone completely ignores it. So yeah, this was a nice eye-opener that how to demystify the mysticism.
Exactly. Yeah, there's nothing mystical. You know, like most of us are trained in modern science. We know how modern science works. So we're not enamored by technology. Likewise, once you understand the metaphysics of the yogic science, it no more enamors you, because what a yogi cannot do is transform your consciousness. And that a bhakta can do. That's why a devotee is more powerful than a yogi. He can manipulate spirit, or he can influence spirit in a positive way. Right? Yogi cannot manipulate spirit. That is where bhakti, you can see, is more powerful. Like that. Right? Mike.
Prabhupada was there, and few people asked Prabhupada, what you can do?
Yeah.
So the yogi, that yogi creates a golden ball, and
right,
that yogi can fly in the sky. Then Prabhupada tells that, see, so many devotees, I have transformed their heart.
Yes.
And they are just surrender everything, and
yes,
they have surrendered to Krishna, and this I can do.
Yeah.
And everybody,
I made
was
hippies into happies. That is Prabhupada's mystic power.
Mystic,
yeah,
power.
Changing the consciousness of, yeah, and changing the whole course of world. Humanity has changed forever. Like when we read Gautam Muni brought Dwapar Yuga, Treta Yuga before Dwapar Yuga, we think, oh wow, mystical power. But we don't realize, I mean, I'm sure just 100 years later, people will look back and they read Leelamrita and like, wow, did this really happen? Right? I'm sure even now we think, did this really happen? But it happened. We are witnessing a miracle right now. Yeah. All right. So thank you very much for very, very patient listening. Grantra Shrimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Anantakoti Vaishnavinda ki jai.